97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the possible unionization of college athletes. Our guests are Tim Cruthers, author and former senior writer at Sports Illustrated, and Jason Kahn, UNC alum and sports reporter at WCTV, the CBS affiliate, in Tallahassee, Florida. Last month, the regional director of the National Labor Relations Board ruled that football players at Northwestern University should be considered employees and given the right to form a union. Just Wednesday, the university appealed that decision. We'll get into the particulars of the appeal in just a minute, but let's start with you, Jason. Good idea, bad idea to let college athletes, specifically football players, form a union?
Well, to be honest with you, Charlie, I think that I'm on the fence with this one right now because there are so many factors that go into this for either side. And right now I'm probably leaning toward the NCAA and the universities, but very slightly. And again, there are so many factors that go into it. You have to look at the player side and why they're doing this. A lot of them are saying it's because they want the medical coverage, obviously, to get full medical benefits. Obviously, you can get paid for profiting off the university, what they're making off of these players as well. And then you look at the university side and what they're trying to do here. And the obvious thing here with universities is that, you know, what about the non-revenue sports athletes? Right now, the focus is only with the football players. So now you're really getting into a situation where there's going to be a social divide between the football players there and then the non-revenue sports. And really, my situation here, my problem with what the players are doing is that that social divide that I was just talking about right there, I feel like it breaks up the authenticity of why they're there. And that's because of their scholarship, the education that they're supposed to be getting. They already get a full scholarship, and the reason for that full scholarship is to get an education, not to be profiting off of what the university's making off of them. So right now I have to lean toward the NCAA and the universities, and we'll see what happens. But it's going to be kind of ugly over the next couple of years. It isn't going to take effect next year, but we'll see what happens over the next couple of years and how this plays out.
Tim, one note from the appeal that the university filed, and these are quotes. It says it has presented overwhelming evidence that its athletics program is fully integrated with its academic mission, and that it treats its athletes as students first. I don't know if that even passes the smell test.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, you know, student athlete has always been a controversial term anyway. But I think what we're fighting over now is whether students should even be a part of that phrase. I mean, right now I think these athletes are now arguing that we're employees of the university. And we're not, you know, while we are obviously going to school, our primary focus is now that we are now employees who are subject to all the rules of fairness that employees of any other company would be subject to. And it seems to me it's kind of it's really silly for us to even be arguing about that particular element of it. One of the other things that I find interesting about this is that Jason's in Tallahassee, and he's dealing with a football program that's just won the national championship. But this isn't necessarily an argument just about the Florida State football or Kentucky basketball or UNC basketball, or for instance. We're talking about something that's going to have to be argued over the full spectrum of college sports, most of which are not well represented by those particular behemoths of college athletics, but are more about smaller schools most of which do not make any money in the athletic department. And so one of my questions for all this is, how exactly are the smaller schools going to be subject to the same rules that are eventually decided upon? Because they don't, where's that money going to come from? Where's the money going to come from for those schools to pay their athletes? Florida State makes a ton of money. Kentucky basketball makes a ton of money. Even UNC makes a ton of money. But where, but those are not necessarily representative of the hundreds and hundreds of schools that are also going to be subject to whatever decisions are made.
Jason Kane Coulter is the sort of the face of this for Northwestern, and he and others have said that football players specifically spend 50 or 60 hours a week at their sport. Northwestern, in its appeal, says, yeah, but many of those hours are voluntary. Well, again, who gets to define voluntary? You know, if you don't show up for workouts or you don't show up for right. conditioning, then you're not going to start. If you don't start, you know, they're voluntary is a shaky word for me.
Right, and it's absolutely true. I mean, these kids put in those voluntary hours when they're in high school. How do you think they got that scholarship in the first place? They didn't just go to football practice, you know, one day and just, you know, by pure talent, they were great. I mean, some of them are, no question about it, but a lot of these athletes had to train by themselves after practice and put in voluntary hours, and that's what they have to do when they're in college if they want to make it to the pros. And that is, for the most part, many of their goals and their dreams. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a little bit of an interesting way of putting it, that they're not just putting in voluntary hours, they put in the 50, 60 hours a week.
Sports Focus will return right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now back to the show on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking about the possible unionization of college athletes. Our guests are Tim Cruthers and Jason Kahn. Tim, I think it's important to point out that CAPA, the group that's representing the players, says it's, and the players say, we're not asking to be paid to play. What we're asking for is that sports-related medical expenses be covered, period. That there be independent concussion experts on the sidelines. That there's an educational trust fund that after our playing days are over, we can continue and finish up our schooling, and that they be allowed to accept commercial sponsorships. For example, Johnny Manziel. Why couldn't he endorse Wheaties or something? Those do not seem like unreasonable demands, but there is a slippery slope when you unionize a group of athletes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. If you just look at the demands in bullet point form, from what's been put out at this point, a lot of what the athletes are talking about is very reasonable. And let me add one other point to what you've just laid out, and that is this idea that you're on a scholarship on a year-to-year basis. So when you go to a school, I think a lot of people think if somebody's given a scholarship, that is good for their 4 or 5 years, however long they're at that school, and that cannot be taken away. That's obviously not true. I mean, a lot of times guys get injured, all of a sudden their scholarship is lost, and then where are they? They've got, you know, they're stuck at a school where they can't afford to actually attend. So when you look at their demands, That's a lot of what they're asking for is very reasonable. Now, I think they're playing it well from a public relations standpoint by not talking at all at this point about being paid for play. Now, I don't think I'm alone in thinking that is where this is eventually headed. That if unionization were allowed to occur, that would eventually be something that we would be discussing. But I think it's a smart PR on the part of the Northwestern group that is not something that they have brought into the conversation as of yet, and it actually strikes me that from a PR perspective, the students are doing a far better job to me than the adults in the NCAA who are treating it in a very dismissive way. I think when you read Mark Emmert's comments from the Final Four, where he talks about this whole situation is essentially ridiculous, My experience with dealing with young adults like this is when you call a cause like theirs ridiculous, you're asking for that to be a means of inspiration for them to continue to keep this thing going, and so from a PR standpoint, I think that the students are doing a far better job right now than the people who probably should be more wise about how to handle this from a PR perspective.
Tim, I want to get back to the PR aspect of it, but Jason, first, you know, you mentioned the divide, if you will, between the revenue athletes and the non-revenue athletes, and doesn't that already exist? And this doesn't seem like it would perpetuate that any more than it already is.
Oh, there's no question that the football players get star treatment. Again, I cover Florida State University, as Tim mentioned earlier, and you can see that divide as it is. I mean, you have guys like Jameis Winston, who's treated like a superstar. All he has to do is eat lunch, and he's got a camera on him. I mean, these football players are already treated like they're pros in a college-centric town. This town considers Florida State University their professional sport, and the football team, they're treated like kings around here. Now, that is part of the social divide. I mean, the thing is, if you start paying these players, then it gets even worse. And I think that you know, now there'll be more pressure on these kids, and I don't think they're prepared for it. You know, coming out of high school, they're already ill-prepared for the college life, I feel, from just my accounts. A lot of these kids, they come in here from different areas of the country, and when they're all of a sudden just thrown into the fire, here in college with the academics, with the social life, and then having to play football, I think that a lot of these guys are already out of their element. And I think if there was a better system involved, it would probably ease their time here trying to get adjusted. But, you know, then you add the money factor, and you add the benefits, and the higher the expectations get. So when you have that divide between the soccer players and then the football players, I think it causes some animosity within the athletics department. I don't think any athletic director is looking forward to something like this.
Tim, I said I wanted to jump back to the PR thing, and as part of Northwestern's appeal, and this was just a regional board. It still has to go, the players have to vote, it has to go to the full NLRB board, but in its appeal, Northwestern says, speaking of Kane Coulter, the former quarterback, he doesn't speak for the values of Northwestern or the priorities of his teammates. It's like, why take a shot at the kid?
Right, and that's what I was just talking about. I feel like the tin ear of the administrators on this issue is shocking to me. It's just that for the idea that it's as if they don't understand that they're not even taking it seriously as a real issue. That it's almost as if it's just like, it's just a bunch of crazy kids who are trying to do some crazy thing. And we don't, I don't think at this point, this is something that's been building for a long time. It's not something that just all of a sudden Kane Coulter and a few of his friends decided this would be kind of a fun thing to do because he took a class on labor law. This is something that's been building for years, and this is just now the tip of the iceberg as far as I'm concerned.
Sports Focus will be back right after this.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus. Our topic that we're discussing is the possible unionization of college athletes. Our guests, Tim Carruthers and Jason Kahn. Jason, as Tim mentioned, this is not something that has just raised its ugly head. How athletes are treated and how whether they even have a voice at the table has been an issue for a long time, and we see in this story with Northwestern, and in the Ed O'Bannon case, and in other court cases, that a lot of things are starting to come to a head. That seems like the NCAA is going to have to do something.
I'm surprised that the NCAA wasn't prepared for something like this in the beginning. They didn't seem like it, they took it seriously. Tim had talked about it. Right now, they better get their act together because these athletes are apparently pushing them to the brink. And to be honest with you, the Ed O'Bannon case with the naming rights, especially with the video games, that was, I guess, the first real explosion from college athletes to the NCAA. And then now the NCAA has to worry about, well, are these athletes going to be treated differently now? Are they going to be treated like professional players? And so it's going to be pretty touchy over the next couple of years. Again, this may not take effect next year, may not take effect a couple of years from now, but the NCAA has to be ready 3 years down the road for the possibility of this happening.
Tim, reading up on this case a little bit, is the current quarterback, Kane Coulter's former quarterback, current quarterback, says, you know what, I really should have thought more before I signed this note that said I support the idea of a union, and I'm not so sure now that it's the best idea. And that strikes me as a kid that some coach or some administrators had a conversation with.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's funny, you know, we've been talking about this on a very macro level, but it's one of the things that is interesting about being a professor here at the university is you get to see things on a more micro level. I teach a course in the fall where I invite athletes and coaches and reporters into class, and my students Q&A them. And we had James Hurst from the UNC football team in, and we were talking to him about a lot of different issues. And then toward the end of the conversation, somebody brought up the idea of pay for play. And it's funny, James just really perked up at that particular moment and started talking about the issue and about the level of communication that he has had with other people, other athletes all around the country through social media. And I was really surprised that level of conversation had occurred. And for him, it was, you know, it's something that it's easy for him to talk to because his career, as you point out, was over. I mean, it's not he's not really concerned about any backlash anymore about what might occur for him still being on the team. And I think that's I've started to notice that more and more. I mean, another example is just the other day in my writing class, I asked the kids. I said, you can write about anything you want. We're going to do an opinion column, and you can choose any column, any topic you want in all of sports. Half of my 18 kids wrote about one and dones or about pay for play. It's something that has suddenly become more of something within the social context, and that kids in college, only two of my students are athletes, and the rest of them are just normal students who have picked up this banner, so to speak, and it's really become part of their thought process. And I was just really interested in the fact that to me tells me that we've really started to that the average kid is now actually concerned about this issue as opposed to just, you know, the superstar athletes around the country who feel like they're getting screwed.
And Jason, again, I think it's important for us to point out that at this point, the players are not asking for pay for play, but, you know, that could always come up once you have a union. You know, what are you going to expand to now? So I think there are many more questions than there are answers at this point. But it's something that, as Tim has said a couple of times, the people who are the ruling body, they need to take this seriously.
Absolutely. I think if you don't take this seriously, then, well, there are going to be some problems over the next couple of years. The NCAA has to act quick.
The NCAA has had issues along these lines, Tim and Jason, for a long time, and many of us who have been longtime observers of that institution would say it has not acted in the best interest of the players, and now they're asking that the NCAA and member institutions begin to do that. Whether this is the correct route to go, or this opens up the discussion, we will find out. That does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guests, Tim Cruthers and Jason Kahn. Thanks also to producer Justin Blankenship and to engineer Gary Kirk. Thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.